This is Audible.
Ahriman, Key of Infinity by John French. Performed by John Banks, Steve Conlin, Jonathan Keeble, and Saul Reichlin. The prisoner leapt off the slab. Its body slid through the molecules of the restraints and hit the energy dome. Sparks showered through the air as the field collapsed into a flat blast wave. The prisoner landed in a crouch. Its jailers loomed above it, towering in their armor. Behind them, their crude automaton began to turn, light glinting off the silver and black of its carapace.
Kill protocol!
The warrior in orange and black armor shouted. The automaton stamped forwards, piston-driven limbs shaking the deck. The cannon on its shoulder swiveled. The prisoner could feel the dark energy dancing in the weapon. It knew its shape and taste, old and familiar from wars that had scarred the stars when they were young. The gun weapon drew breath to fire. The prisoner's senses traced the distances between every point in the room and sliced time down until only the decay of atoms marked its passing. The short distance from it to the automaton's gun, from the automaton to its masters, from those masters to the door. Every measured value became like crystal, every facet and plane extending through countless dimensions. The automaton fired. A beam of darkness sliced out. The air screamed. The beam struck the prisoner's torso. The substance of its form began to unravel, crumbling into nothingness as the beam bored through it. It was so quick. For other creatures, it would have been an instant, but for the prisoner, it was a slow unfolding of obliteration. It had time to observe, to analyze, to know that the beam would pulse and the black energies would swallow its body in a flash of collapsing matter. It would not survive, but it did not need to survive. It just needed to reach the sphere which lay on a plinth behind its jailers. Its hand closed over the sphere. And the universe was made again in a flash of collapsing time. The prisoner became aware. Its senses reconnected to its consciousness one at a time. It could hear movement around it. It heard the words, and its mind began to break down the data they carried. Potential meanings rose and clustered. It could see the root of meaning in the language, but it needed more to form understanding. It was a simple language, but with some unusual symbolic systems grafted into its structure. The voices of long-dead civilizations echoed at the edge of the words.
Function, ekitkel of technology, raus belshans,
shishan. To untain and isquai the Raos Asan to Dixis.
E just verash daenu.
Fear to hat we caus estu.
That enhet comfort.
With a little more analysis, the prisoner could have traced the roots of the language back to its genesis. That could be useful in time, but for now it was irrelevant. The prisoner needed to escape. And for that, it needed one thing. It needed time.
It is aware of us.
Power is running through its structure.
Is that a way of saying yes or of saying no?
It is the only data I have available that relates to your question. I have no knowledge of this form of life.
Life? Yes, I suppose we must call it that.
Visual input returned. Three figures stood before the prisoner. two were of the bipedal typical norm and wore machine armor. The third was a pure machine entity, albeit a crude one, an automaton crafted of circuits and pistons. An energy lance with a fluted barrel projected above its shoulders. The prisoner watched the trio as its sight stretched into the edges of the electromagnetic spectrum. It could not perceive the submolecular yet, but that would come. It needed time, and the best way to gain that was to speak.
I can hear you. I can see you.
You speak our language.
Its root and structure is simple. Deriving its method and order expression is likewise simple.
What is your name?
Name? Yes. A concept that your pseudo-knowledge system would value. The closest approximation that I can offer is Setek. Servant of eternity to the dynastics of the Hyksos.
Two figures glanced at each other.
It speaks like a human. There are emotional markers in the tonal structure. Arrogance, defiance, disdain.
No, it is not talking like a human. It is talking like us. It is imitating us. Are you not, Setek?
You are a perceptive but limited being.
Everything is a matter of perspective. From where I look at this moment, we have much to gain from one another.
Setek did not reply for a second. A section of its consciousness was preparing to realign the molecules of its body. When that was complete, it would be able to phase through its bonds. From there, well, that depended very much on where it was. On board a large ship in the vacuum, yes, it was certain of that. But where was that ship? It shut down the line of thought. It would need to have answers, but they would only be relevant once it was free. For that, it needed to reach the chronometron, which lay on a stone plinth to the side of the slab. It would not have time to perform a significant time alteration, but it could reset events and make incremental changes for the next time it lived these moments. It calculated what it would need to do, and the precise operation it would need to perform in the instant it touched the chronometron. As the formulae crystallized in its mind, it reflected that it might already have done these exact actions before.
What are your names? That is the convention within your communication template, is it not?
My name is Azek Araman, and my companion's name is Ignis.
I have never encountered your species before, but you are not typical specimens. When I was last conscious, there were species that existed that might have developed into your genus. But I would have expected both greater deviation from that physiology and less amplification of gross physical qualities. Therefore, you are not evolved creatures. You are creations. Fusions of crude knowledge and biological stock. Is this line of reasoning correct?
Ignis turned to Ahriman. The black lines of his bioelectric tattoos reformed into a different pattern.
Do you intend to question this thing, or does our method of analysis consist of letting it ask the questions? I do not intend this as humorous.
Ahriman did not respond, but held the gaze of Setek. There was something about that stare. Setek had not felt anything close to an emotion for eons, but the cold intensity in those blue eyes.
You infer a great deal from very little, Setek.
You are impressed by such small things. When you have aided in the building and destruction of civilizations greater than anything you can imagine, the wonder of the beasts which roam the ruins means nothing.
I infer that it means us.
My people shackled the stars. and broke mortality when the species you sprang from had barely left the slime pools it spawned in. Our wars burned reality, and the dominion of our kings is without limit. The ground you tread on is not yours. It is ours.
The Necrontyr.
The Sleeping Ones.
That name is not ours. Why give a name to totality?
Because whatever you were, you failed. Those that outlive ruin can call the wreckage of the past whatever they please.
We were, and are, and shall be. And I must thank you both, Alaman and Ignis. This primitive exchange of meaningless emotional postures has proved most instructive. I know you now, Azek Adaman, and will remember you. But you will not remember this!
Setek dissolved the shackles into dust and leapt for the chronometron. Ignis and Ahriman began to move. They were fast, very fast, but they were unprepared, and Setek's hand was around the chronometron, and the calculations flowed across the contact, and Ignis shouted, and the world began to end again.
Cadet! Clear protocol!
The beam of darkness stabbed out from the automaton's gun and struck Setek in the torso. The chronometron activated, and the present became the past. Time peeled back around Setek. It could not remember the previous instances of this moment, but information existed in his awareness that could only be there if he had already passed through this time before. It knew the names of the three figures who stood above him. It knew the positioning of each object in the cell, and most importantly, it knew that this was the final loop through this instance. Its chronometron had moved position by increments through each of the previous iterations of this encounter. Each time it had reached the device before, it was destroyed, and each of those times it had been able to steal a sliver more time for the next instance. With each of those changes, it had increased its awareness and changed the setting of the chronometron. It only needed to perform this one final operation, and it would be able to collapse this loop of time. It would be free.
It is aware.
Yes, it is aware.
Setek's thought flow faltered. Something was out of place in the pattern of events. Something that it had not engineered. It did not have time to deduce what was wrong. Every slice of its consciousness was needed to prepare its body to phase through its shackles.
You are Setek, Cryptek of the Dynastics of the Hyksos. Can you understand me?
I can understand you. Your linguistic forms are as primitive as your methods of imprisonment.
Do you know why you are here?
Setek paused. The question did not fit. Lines of deduction and inference began to spawn in Setek's mind. He shut them down. It was irrelevant, and he needed his full consciousness preparing to interface with the chronometron as he was almost ready. He just needed another sliver of time.
You wish information. You wish secrets.
Yes, but your insight is limited.
And this exchange is irrelevant!
The shackles dissolved as Setek came off the slab. The skin of his frame flickered from dull chrome to mirror black. The automaton began to move. Its cannon swiveled, the dark energies within built. Setek's hand extended to the chronometron. The beam of darkness snapped out, but it would never find its target. The chronometron was beneath Setek's hand, Its fingers closed on the device and froze. Frost climbed its digits. The air was shimmering. Setek's awareness was bubbling with paradox. Light blurring to dark, mass and energy interchanging and vanishing out of existence. The beam of the automaton's gun was a frozen splinter of blackness hanging in midair. Ahriman and Ignis were still, but light blazed around them, feathering into shadow, shifting between colors. Invisible bands of force coiled tighter around Setek as it forced out words.
You are slaves of the Anathema Realm.
And now you see the totality of your position. To watch your actions has been most illuminating.
Ahriman extended his hand, and the chronometron rose from the plinth and settled into his palm. He turned it between his fingers, head tilting as the light played over the sphere's surface. Ignis stepped closer beside him, tattoo patterns shifting across his blank face. Ahriman opened his hand, and the chronometron floated up into the air, and then dropped into Ignis's grasp.
Incredible. The effect on the flow of time is seamless. Not even a ripple in the warp. The events are simply reset and flow again.
And this from a bauble carried by one of their techno-viziers. Does this answer your doubts about the reality of such technology?
It is persuasive, but by what means does it function?
Setek's eyes buzzed with static as Ahriman leaned in towards him. The green lenses of the sorcerer's helm blazed bright.
Ah, that, my brother, is the heart of the question.
Brother Sergeant Guriel stared at the Eversaur as its jaw moved in poor sync with its words.
Four.
Guriel turned to escape the prayer cell and stopped. There was little point in running. Seth would have his vengeance.
Three.
He sighed and stooped to one knee.
Two.
At least this death would be quick. Seth did not have to afford him such a kindness.
Sanguinius, forgive me.
One.
The Assassination of Gabriel Seth by Andy Smiley. Performed by John Banks, Tim Bruce, Steve Conlin, and Andrew Wincott.
This pilgrimage isn't necessary.
Guriel looked to Seth. The chapter master's shoulders remained hunched, his eyes fixed on the deck.
I oversaw construction of the shrine. Only the most devout of serfs labored on it. Chaplain Apollos performed the rite sacrifice. There's no need.
There is every need.
He gestured to the other flesh terrors in the gunship's hold, instructing them to deactivate their armor's audio capture.
We abandoned them here, Guriel. We left them to die. Captain Temel and the others.
For what? So that glorious Baal could live another day?
Seth got to his feet and snatched his eviscerator from the overhead weapons rack.
This world has been retaken. The taint of heresy has been expunged and its populace has been re-educated. To the Imperium of Man, it is as it was. The lives lost here will be estimated only by the number of lasguns that never made it to the quartermaster's tally. We are not so callous. We cannot afford to be.
Seth fell to silence, transfixed by the chapter symbol on Guriel's pauldron. A teardrop of blood trapped within a savage saw blade. He hadn't been present when the chapter was founded, and he had discovered nothing in any text that spoke of the origin of the heraldry. Once, to him, It had perfectly captured the essence of the Flesh Terrors, the blood of Sanguinius fueling the savagery needed to fight in his name. Regret pulled Seth's eyes closed a moment. Now he saw the symbol for what it was, a life engulfed by violence. Moment by moment, the Flesh Terrors' twin hearts drove them towards extinction, urging war and madness to swallow them.
We must remember every loss, Gorion, or they will come ever swifter until we find ourselves alone with oblivion.
Seth clamped a hand to Guriel's pauldron and moved past him towards the rear hatch.
The few must remember the many.
The Storm Raven shuddered as it decelerated, jerking to a halt as its landing struts impacted. Distracted, Seth depressed the door control of the Storm Raven. The compartment's illuminators flickered red as quickfire pistons and hydraulics slammed the assault ramp down.
Wait here!
Seth dismissed the five-man honor guard who'd assembled ahead of him and stepped from the gunship. Outside, Nakaris was as he remembered it, a dark world hung prostrate beneath a darker sky. Its sun had long ago dwindled to a husk, and even the nearest stars were too distant to flicker over the horizon. Guriel descended the ramp. Seth didn't stop to object, his attention fixed on the Pantheon of Remembrance. Discolored by the rain, the smooth crimson ceramite of the structure's rounded sides seemed visceral. Among the ruins of Nakaris's capital, the shrine stood as a noble headstone, marking the end of the conflict and the beginning of rebirth. Seth stifled a growl as he dwelt on the memory of Flesh Terrors who had given their lives in defense of the city. Their bodies and the precious gene seed held within were gone forever, lost among the tangled remnants of the world. Seth trudged onward, weighed down by history.
I will never leave the sons of Cretacea to die again. Never again.
If the words were for Guriel's benefit, Seth had not spoken them loudly enough. Inside, the Pantheon was Spartan. Block stonework encased bare columns and slate-gray doors. Seth soaked up the emptiness of the place, letting the blank walls calm him. Unlike many of the other Space Marine chapters, the Flesh Terrors did not view death as a final chance to celebrate a fallen warrior's deeds. There could be nothing ornate, nothing to distract from the act of remembrance.
The main chamber is through here.
Guriel gestured directly ahead. Seth nodded and moved down the corridor.
I will enter alone.
Guriel fell back a step, allowing Seth to pass.
Of course.
Guriel bit back a smile. Seth spun around, his bolt pistol raised. A reinforced blast door separated Seth from Guriel, sealing the chapter master in the corridor. Guriel stood unfazed on the other side, staring at Seth through the pane of armor glass set into the middle of the door.
What is this?
Seth lowered his weapon and stepped up to the door.
Guriel!
I'm sorry, Lord. What I do for the good of the chapter.
And what is it you do? What is this?
Seth pushed his forehead against the glass.
Look at me, traitor!
Guriel shifted forward so that his face touched the glass.
You die today.
Seth smashed his fist into the glass. Guriel didn't flinch.
Not likely.
You have brought nothing but shame and death upon us. We are too few to take the risks you've. The lives of the Flesh Terrors are not yours to waste.
You would stand in judgment over me? Better than you have tried, Captain.
The Chapter Masters betrayed their oaths. They let Astaroth hold them to ransom. They had their minds turned by the ravings of another madman. I will not fall so easily. It is over, Seth. Someone has finally found the strength to hold you to account.
You know nothing of the weight I bear, of the choices I am forced to make. It is for the chaplains to judge my actions, and Sanguinius alone to judge the merit of my soul.
No! Apollos and the other chaplains are blind to your misdeeds. He himself is little more than a barbarian. A slaughter master given rank
kill you for this!
Threats! Always more threats! Can you not see? That is why we are here. You threaten the Inquisition! Even the Blood Angels! Your arrogance is without limit!
Seth thundered his forehead into the glass. Guriel took a step back as the smallest of cracks threaded across the surface.
Only my rage is limitless, and I will unleash it upon your flesh until...
All things end, Seth.
Guriel pressed a palm to the glass.
Others, whose wrath and reach exceeds mine, would see you punished.
Seth glared at the pendant wedged between Guriel and the glass, an inquisitorial rosette.
The Emperor's light no longer touches you, and you have no friends in the darkness.
Guriel turned and started away.
And yours will not save you!
Seth smashed his fist into the glass again, denting his gauntlet.
You are dead! Know that!
Guriel ignored him and kept walking. Seth's eyes tore bloody holes in Guriel's back as he fought to master his temper.
I will see you soon, brother.
Seth waited until Guriel disappeared from sight before turning to follow the corridor to its end and enter the Remembrance Chamber. The room was small, perhaps 7 good strides across.
Get on with it.
Seth squared his shoulders and snarled into the darkness.
Get on with it! I have a traitor to kill!
A muscled figure in a black skin suit stalked from the shadows, a wicked rictus on its polished skull helm.
Ever saw?
Seth took a measured step towards the assassin.
Is this it? I have fought the Reaper himself. I have slain warp-spawned beast and Xenos demigods. I will not fall to a drug-fueled puppet.
Seth gritted his teeth in a savage grin, forcing truth behind his words. Eversaurs were bioengineered killing machines, monsters of science and death. Free from consciousness, they were little more than walking weapons. The assassin shuddered, jerking as it brought its body under control. Seth could smell the pungent cocktail of drugs saturating its flesh. It had been stimmed to breaking point.
Flesh! Terror!
It hissed, seeming to size up Seth.
Do you know who I am? Assassin!
Yes! Yes!
The assassin inclined its head and straightened.
Seth! Gabriel! Chapter Master of the Flesh Terrors! Target 1-1 Beta 2! Priority! And Radicite!
Good luck.
Seth's glibness was deliberate. He needed to stay calm, focused. Guriel's allies had chosen their weapon well. Seth could not give in to his rage. He could not rip the thing limb from limb. Eversaurs were walking bombs. Their organs were soaked in biochemicals. Dormant cells awaited a catalyst, a jolt from the assassin's nervous system. The moment the thing's heart stopped, detonation.
The blood is my strength and armor.
Seth's jaw hardened. They had sought to steal from him all that he was. Again, the universe had discounted him as a berserker. Again, he had to prove to both it and himself that he was more. The Eversaur brought up its pistol at blinding speed. The assassin's opening was a kill shot aimed at Seth's unarmored head. Seth shot forward, raising his shoulder and tucking in his chin. The Eversaur's round slammed into Seth's pauldron. A second and third round punched fist-sized holes in the outer cerement. Seth returned fire. His shots went wide, smashing the stonework in the assassin's wake. Seth kept firing, tracking the Eversaur as it slipped forwards, charging across the wall to his left. Frustration drew a snarl from Seth. The assassin was too fast. His rounds struck more stone, ruining the chamber while the Eversaur's bullets battered his armor, gouging chunks from his breastplate. Seth held his ground as the Eversaur bore down on him. Their guns roared their last and racked empty. Discarding its pistol, the assassin sprung from the wall, spinning in the air around Seth's guard. It landed, blade extended, and unleashed a taut swing meant to decapitate the flesh taker. Seth shifted his weight back over his heels, edging away from the blade. The assassin's blade sparked in anger as it cut through Seth's gorget and broke the skin of his neck. The Eversaur allowed no respite, following up with a right-handed punch that smashed Seth's cheekbone. The flesh terror rolled with the blow, letting the momentum carry him clear of the assassin's reach. Crouched, Seth tore his eviscerator from its mag harness on his back and threw it at the assassin as it closed on him. The huge chain weapon was useless against such an agile opponent, but it bought him the moment he needed to regain his footing. The Eversaur twisted fracturally too late, and the edge of the blade scored across the meat of its thigh.
So, even weapons blade.
Seth grinned and drew his knife. The Eversaur smiled its skull grin back.
Pilot, get us back to the Victus.
Guriel stopped at the top of the assault ramp and glanced back towards the Pantheon.
We are children of war, anointed in the ashes of victory.
Guriel recalled the words of Nasir Ahmet as the gunship pushed into the air. The Flesh Terror's first chaptermaster had known what it took to ensure a future. Guriel stared at the Pantheon as it began to shrink from view. It was the greatest of shames that Seth had been unable to find the same courage within himself. His resolve hardened, Guriel depressed the locking stud and stepped into the gunship's hold.
Master Seth will send for us once his vigil is complete.
Guriel addressed Brother Rahan. The other flesh terror rose from his assault cradle to question Guriel's order to leave.
The Pantheon is secure.
Rahab hesitated a moment before nodding.
As the blood wills it.
Guriel moved past his brother to cut off any further discussion and maglocked himself to the bench nearest the viewport. Below, the city quickly receded, dwindling until the teardrop outline of the shrine seemed like a bloody stain on the planet's surface.
A soul wrapped in the armor of righteousness can neither be injured by doubt nor blackened by failure.
This time, the words were Chaplain Apollos's. The chaplain was even more battle-crazed than the Death Company he led to war, and Guriel had little doubt the catechism was more for Apollos's benefit than any of his flock. Still, in that moment, they brought him a measure of comfort. The Eversaur's blade flashed towards Seth's face. Seth moved too late. The length of steel drove into his cheek. He twisted, tearing his face free, and struck the assassin with a backhanded blow. The Eversaur looked at him, its manic eyes daring him to strike it again. He obliged. The Eversaur rode the blow, turning in place to spear a kick into Seth's stomach. Seth staggered backwards as a web of cracks spread over his armor. The assassin struck him again, a leaping knee that snapped his head back and threw fog across his vision. Seth dropped to one knee for balance, folding his arms around his head and upper chest in desperate defense. The assassin battered his limbs before whipping his blade up and around in an overhead arc. Seth pushed up, jamming his wrists against the blade's hilt. Crimson runes yelled in warning from behind Seth's retina. His armor was ruined, taken apart by blade and bolt shell. He was bleeding from wounds that couldn't close under the Eversaur's relentless assault. He would die soon. The Eversaur rasped as Seth sunk back to one knee, the shield he'd made with his arms beginning to buckle. Seth glared at his execution. Pallid skin, thick with scar tissue and studded with implants, bulged from tears in its suit. It was more weapon than man. Even servitors had more humanity. And yet, Seth smelt the air, smoke. It drifted from the assassin's skin in thickening tendrils. For all the Eversaur's augmentation, it was still man. It was human physiology pushed to the limits by bioscience, but it was still human. Flesh and blood, not bred for such feats as it had taken to bring Seth low. The chemicals fueling its body, forcing it to beat ahead of Seth, had reached their half-life. The assassin's fate was sealed. The servos in Seth's armor spat and gave up under the unrelenting pressure. Seth tried to force the assassin's blade away from his face. Blood began to weep from the Eversaur's eye sockets as it forced the edge of the blade into Seth's forehead. The assassin grinned wide, drooling as it leant over him. Survival had never been the mission. Seth felt his strength falter as the blade began to cut into his skull. Blood poured down over his face, filling his mouth as it stretched in agony. His blood, not Sanguinius's nor the Emperor's, his. And he was more than the sum of the gifts they had given him, and far more terrible. Resolve lent vigor to Seth's limbs, barring the blade from cutting deeper. Before the curse, before the blood, Seth was a monster, a butcher. His darkness was his and his alone. He was Gabriel Seth. The beast growled in his soul and answered his summons. Seth yanked his arms from under the blade and twisted. The weapon cleaved down through his left shoulder into his primary heart. Seth roared as his fist connected with the Eversaur's ribs. The blow punched the Eversaur from its feet, pitching it back and into the wall. It pushed up onto its feet. Seth's fist was waiting.
Not tomorrow.
The hammer blow caved in the assassin's chest.
Not until I am done.
Seth hit it again, smashing its collarbone.
Not until
a third blow cracked the Eversaur's skull, Seth striking with one hand as the other stopped the assassin from falling. Seth brought his foot up and stamped the assassin's head into the wall. The Eversaur convulsed as it dropped, adrenal glands willing it to get up.
Be at peace, wretch.
He wanted to kill it, to rip out its organs and beat its brain to pulp. They would die together. A final, violent embrace, and then the peace of oblivion. Seth tore his eyes away, hunting for something else to hit. He stood a moment, immobile, transfixed by rage. Seth punched the wall. He struck it again, and again, and again, smashing his fist into it until long after his knuckles had broken.
Enough! Enough! End me! Tempting.
With numb indifference, Seth pulled the assassin's blade from his chest and cut off the Eversaur's arm at the elbow.
But I have use for you yet.
Grabbing the Eversaur by the stump of its arm, Seth dragged it behind him into the corridor. From the far end, the blast door glared at him in challenge. Seth started towards the door.
You will fare no better than this addled puppet. I will break you too.
There will be others.
Seth looked down at Guriel. The other flesh terror's torso was a ragged mess of burnt flesh and melted musculature. The Eversaur's death throes had bathed the cell in supercharged plasma, turning the steel of the walls to a dripping paste.
Others will come for you.
Perhaps, but they will fare no different.
Sanguinius.
Our father is not listening.
Forgive.
Not to you. Not to any of us.
The Heart of Decay by Ben Counter. Performed by John Banks, Matthew Hunt, and Toby Longworth.
Captain Vedana, well met.
Well met. Is there any change with the prisoner, Apothecary?
His life signs are abnormal, but they are steady. I'm glad we brought him in uninjured. Who knows what I would find in there if I had to operate.
You may still have to get him on the slab, Archaon. There's no telling how far I will have to go.
You're doing this alone?
It's the only way, brother. Open the cell.
Oh, happiest of days! I finally have a visitor.
In good spirits, I see.
Of course. Why must relictors be so morose all the time? Always so humorless, so grim.
I see nothing too joyous in your current position, Urbar.
So, you know my name. Wonders upon wonders.
We know a great deal about you, Galactus Urbar of the Death Guard Legion. The relictors make something of a speciality of uncovering that which is hidden. The deeds of the Death Guard are recorded in the Libris Morituris Aeternum. It is thought lost, but we have a copy in our librarium. Your name is written there. So, you see, when we set our sights on learning a secret, we learn it.
So, we are to engage in a battle of wits? Oh, what fun! So, just what secret is it you desire to learn from me? The names of your fellow space marines whose lives I have taken over the millennia? The worlds full of innocents compelled to death and madness by our campaigns? Or the glimpses of glorious Nurgle I was granted for my service to the Plague God? Do you wish to hear of that, brother?
I am not your brother.
Now, have I hit a nerve? A million apologies for my trespass. How was I to know that such a simple word as brother would cause you such distress? Does it disgust you, brother, to think that you and I are so much the same?
You were taken when your spaceship was crippled by our strike cruiser and boarded. My battle brother, Celturis, was lost. You killed him.
So, that was his name. How hot his blood was when I set it free with a stroke of my blade. I shall hold the sight of him dying as a most precious memory for the rest of my days.
And just how many of those days do you think you have left?
And so we come to the threats. You are going to kill me, is that right? Perhaps inflict sufferings without number if I do not speak. How sad for you that it is a waste of your time. I was created to know no fear, just like you, brother. The infliction of pain is merely a reminder of the blessed decay that courses through me. The spectacle of death takes me one step closer to uniting with all things that rot in the great cauldron of the Grandfather. No, brother, I care not how many days I have left or how they will be filled. I have spent 10,000 years in service to my God. There is nothing left in this universe to threaten me
Your
with...
spacecraft, the Bubonicus. It was in transit toward the region of the Ghoul Stars. You were headed there with some urgency. Just you, a crew of servitors, and a cargo of fresh bodies from the reaping of Kathana. Where were you headed, and what were you going to do when you got there?
So now the rules of our game are set. You want to know what I am going to do with the corpses. Then, as a token of my sportsmanship, I will give you that. The Blessed of Carthana were raw materials for experimentation.
Experimentation into what?
No, brother. Do you think I would give up on our game so easily? We have barely started. No, there must be a give and a take, Captain. You are a captain of the Relictors, are you not? Such an exalted personage I must be to deserve interrogation by one such as you. No. For every morsel I parcel out, you must pay me back in kind. That is the game we will play.
Perhaps you have misunderstood your position here. You are imprisoned in our fortress monastery. There is